messenger. And the other thing which kind of stands out in this particular sutta is this idea that no volition needs to be exerted. The Pali here, na chetanaya karaniya, quite literally means not to be done by volition. Not to be done by volition, right? Not to be done by exertion. Not to be done by an act of will. Not to be done by pushing yourself or anything like that. In other words, these are not states that arise because you want them to arise, because you choose them to arise, because you will them into existence. No, it's the opposite. It says here, it is in accordance with nature, right? Buddha says it is natural that these things arise. So they arise one thing after the other as a natural progression on the path when meditation is working in the right way. This word natural in Pali is dhammata, it's related to dhamma. Dhamma can be translated as nature or law, right? The laws of nature in a sense is what dhamma very often means. So it's dhammata, it's in accordance with nature that these things arise. And again, this is a very powerful thing. It says a lot about how we should approach meditation practice, right? If you cannot will things into being, then the will is really out of place in meditation practice. It's not about willing things. In fact, it's about letting the will be and allowing the process to take off on its own. That is what this is really saying. And so this is very much the way Ajahn Brahm teaches meditation, right? The idea of just getting out of the way, not doing anything, but allowing the process to kind of work by itself. And so when you come on a meditation retreat like this, it is, you know, the way this works then is basically you just kind of rest, right? You rest until the brightness of the mind and the happiness of the mind kind of arises by itself. It comes through by itself. Why does the happiness of the mind come through by itself? It comes through because you have hopefully put in all the foundation work, right? Throughout your life, throughout your daily activities. So this is how this path works. No need to do anything. It's fascinating. You just sit back, and all you have to do is to be patient. All you have to do, as easy to say, of course, being patient is not always easy, right? Just waiting is often very hard. But that is kind of the ideal. And then when you wait, these things tend to happen. So these are some of the powerful aspects of this particular sutta. Now, if it is the case that it is a natural progression whereby one thing leads to another all by itself, it means that the first factor is very important, right? Because it means that if the first factor is not developed fully, then of course this natural progression is not going to happen. But if the first factor is developed, then it will. Then the progression will happen by itself. And the more that first factor is put into place, the more powerful becomes this natural movement of the mind when you sit down in meditation practice. So for that reason, it is the idea of virtue on the Buddhist path is so absolutely paramount, because that is the one thing which gives rise to this progress. And the Pali word for virtue here is sila. And the word sila, most of you probably know the word sila already, a very important word in the Pali language. And it is much broader, and there's much more to the word sila in Pali than there is to the word virtue in English. Virtue in English usually means don't do any bad stuff, right? Basically, that's usually what it means. But the word sila in Pali has to do almost like with personality. It's like who you are as a person. It's about habit. It's about a much broader thing than just virtue as such. This is one of the things that we will be looking at, of course, on this retreat, is what actually this means. But very briefly, it means everything, the way you act, the way you are, the way you think, right? The way you look at the world. All of these things are, in a sense, included in the idea of sila. So it's not just avoiding the bad, it's doing the good. And it's how you use your mind. Do you think in the right way? Do you think in the way that is, wholesome, that is, not to do with metta compassion, not to do with anger and desires and confusion and this kind of things. So all of that is part of this idea of sila. Very, very broad concept and very important. So, if sila is the first factor of this path, and that is what makes everything come into place, if you find out that your meditation is not so powerful, right? You find out that you sit here and after resting for a few days and you find yourself kind of reasonably rested and things are going quite well, but your meditation is not really, your meditation is coming to a certain level but not going beyond that, or whatever that level is, it's going to vary for each one, each person here. But whatever that level is, the reason it is hard to go beyond that is then because of the first factor, right? Then we have to look at ourselves. We have to be honest. What can we do better? Where can we improve this sila? Where can we improve our, almost like improve our personality, right? Make it a bit more bright, a bit more beautiful, a bit more compassionate, a bit more understanding, all these kind of things. And none of us is perfect, right? This is just the reality of things. It is not bad to have to admit that we are not perfect. It's actually important to be able to admit these things. And when you have that honesty with yourself, sometimes it's a bit humiliating, right, to see your own weaknesses. But it's good, and in the end, it's going to be something which really boosts your ability in meditation practice. So that is the tremendous importance of virtue, and once that virtue is in place, then the happiness tends to arise as a consequence of that. This is something that you see in the suttas again and again, these various methods of giving rise to that joy. Right? The Buddha talks about these methods in many different places. And these methods are, one of those most important methods is what is called the sila nusati. Anusati means recollection. Sila is then one's behavior, right? So you recall your behavior. So the idea is that if your behavior is generally good, if you recall it, you feel a sense of joy as a consequence. And then there are other ways of generating that joy. Chaga nusati, recollection of your generosity, recollection of the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. These are the kind of ways. But they're all kind of, the idea of virtue is very fundamental to all of those recollections. And you see them again and again in the suttas, and they're always at the kind of base, at the foundation of meditation practice. And then when that works, then it takes you all the way up to seeing and knowing things according to reality. And that is, of course, what we are ultimately aiming at on the Buddhist path, seeing things according to reality. And this is then what eventually leads to liberation. So let us have a look at this thing in a little bit more detail, each of these factors, just to get a feeling for what this is all about, this sequence. So then you have a bit more meat on the bare skeleton to be able to judge for yourself whether things are going in the right way or not. So first of all, from the idea of having sila, from that arises non-regret, right? So if you are truly good-hearted, then non-regret arises. If you do something bad, then regret often arises. Remember, these things have a reverse side, right? And the reverse side is when the first factor is missing, the second factor is missing. The second factor is missing, the third factor is missing, all the way up to the end of this thing here. So if you haven't got that, you have regret. So what is this regret and non-regret? What is that all about? And it is not a kind of necessarily a coarse form of regret, right? Where you think, "Oh no, I shouldn't have done that. That was a silly thing to do," or whatever. It's not just that sort of coarse form of regret. It is often a very subtle feeling inside that you have done something which isn't quite right. And that subtle feeling, it kind of drags your energy level down. It makes the mind less bright. It makes you feel less good about yourself, basically. That's what it is all about. And that is what that subtle feeling of regret is all about. This is very similar to the idea of when we talk about kamma, you're talking about kamma, which has, in the suttas, it has a result in this life, right? It has a result in the next life or in future lives. And it's very similar to the idea of kamma in this life. What is the kind of kamma that we create in this life? And I would recommend you to watch this very carefully in yourself. When you do something here, which isn't quite right, you know that ideally you wouldn't have done that. Of course, we all do that sometimes, and you shouldn't judge yourself harsh or anything like that, but just be aware of what's going on. And sometimes what happens is that we push these feelings aside because we don't want to see these feelings, right? They can be painful to see that you have done something which it doesn't feel quite right. But please don't push them aside because these are very powerful learning experiences. So when you have done something which isn't quite right, feel what that feels like. What does it feel like? And I know in my own life, if I do something which isn't quite right, it kind of drains the energy from the mind. You feel less energetic. It drains the brightness from the mind. It drains your happiness, basically. It drains your joy. And that is something you can experience straight away, right there, right then. Almost as you are performing the action, you can feel that there's something isn't quite right, and it drains your energy. Now that is this idea of regret, right? This idea is an automatic thing. It's not something that you choose to do. It happens according to nature, that you feel this sense of lack of energy as a consequence. So experience that. And when you feel that, you understand what this actually is quite serious, right? This, if you keep on doing these things that drain your energy and drain your brightness, you're dragging yourself down. You're going down, 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 losing energy more and more. And you can, of course, see where that is heading. It is heading towards a lot of unhappiness and basically a miserable life in the end. And eventually, when it's time to get reborn somewhere else, that is what you take with you. That lack of brightness, that lack of energy, that sense of not being happy in the future. So feel that. And there's also the opposite side of the coin. Right? The opposite side of the coin is when you do something that is truly kind. This is perhaps even more important, right? Learn from your successes rather than from your failures. So you feel what happens when you do something that is truly kind to somebody else. You are generous. You say something kind. You do an act of compassion to somebody. And if you feel, just as you're doing that act, you can feel there is a brightening of the mind inside. There's like an energy, right? A joy, a happiness that comes with that act of kindness. And again, notice that. When you notice that, it will give you such a powerful boost in doing what is good in the world, in doing what is right, because you can see directly and immediately the power of these things. And that is really the way I understand this idea of non-regret here. It's the opposite. It's the energizing of the mind, giving the mind that power which comes through just being virtuous, right? So virtuous leads to this non-regret. So on this retreat, if you have the ability and you allow the mind to go into the past and think about some of the good things you have done, and we all have kind of good memories of things that we have done in the past that gave us an energy boost, allow the mind just to linger on that. Don't force yourself, don't push yourself, just allow the mind to linger on those things. An act of charity, an act of generosity, an act of kindness, whatever it is. And as you do that, you can tap into that feeling you had at that time. Or do kind things also while you're here, right? If you have the opportunity, do something kind to the people around you, and that will be for your own benefit. So always, this is kind of the beautiful thing about kindness. Kindness is obviously beneficial for the other person, but it is even more beneficial for yourself, because you get this energy from that inside of you. It's too always beneficial for everybody. That is the power of virtue and sila on this path. So this is non-regret. And now you can see why virtue and non-regret, why they combine to give rise to joy, right? You feel this gladness inside because you know that you are doing the right thing. this is the kind of the basic joy that we can often feel in everyday life, or certainly on retreat or whatever. It's a kind of basic sense of just gladness inside of you. And once that has arisen in your practice, that is where meditation really can starts to work. This is kind of the basic mind state, the idea of attitude I was talking about yesterday here. Once that basic mind state is in place, then things start to actually really happen. You get that joy, and then you stay with that joy, right? You are perhaps watching the breath at this stage because you're already becoming nice and peaceful. Things are already heading in the right direction. And you are not doing anything at all except just sitting there, right? Being passively aware. The breath is coming in and out, and you're just aware of what's happening here. And as you do that, as you're not doing anything at all, the joy is there, and then gradually that joy increases, and gradually it moves into this thing we call rapture, piti in Pali. So it's just a movement of the mind from a very simple gladness to a more powerful experience, joy or rapture. Often can be felt physically. I'm sure many of you have felt these kind of things on retreat before. You can feel it physically in the body. There's a kind of happiness that actually is felt physically here. And it's not all that hard to recognize if you are aware of this sort of a progression here. It can feel like kind of waves going through the body, or you know, sometimes just parts of the body or whatever. It's a physical experience very often. And all you're doing at this stage is just staying with the breath. You're not doing anything. You're just observing, right? Seeing these things happening here. Whatever it is, whatever meditation object you're using, you're seeing how this progression happens all by itself. Then you continue staying with that. That physical sensation of happiness is still a little bit restless, right? And then as you stay with that, it moves into something more peaceful. Something with less restlessness, something that is completely unagitated, something where the body feels completely solid. It's as if you never want to get up again, right? That's how you feel. It feels like you want to sit like this forever, for the rest of eternity, because it's just so nice. Everything is so incredibly peaceful, so tranquil, so beautiful. This is what happens when the rapture dies down, and the tranquility sets in. This is the pasadi in Pali. And when the tranquility sets in, an even more delightful type of happiness arises. This is the sukha. And this is the next stage in this thing here. A more powerful, more deep kind of happiness. And as that happiness, which is even more deep, sets in, you feel more kind of solid. You feel like, you know, there's nothing else you want to do in your whole life. Now this type of happiness, because it is so solid, because nothing else you want to do, it is incredibly easy to stay in the present moment. In fact, you don't want to be anywhere else except the present moment. It's so easy to watch your meditation object, right? Because happiness is the glue that glues you on to that meditation object. You don't want to be anywhere else. Wow, this is so delightful. And for that reason, stillness, the samadhi, arises out of that very deep and profound happiness. And then, eventually, as you enter these states of samadhi, and they have different levels, of course, then after that, your mind is empowered to see things as they actually are. So, this is a very general outline of the process of meditation. And this is kind of the ideal, right? Don't despair. If you don't feel all these things, or if you don't feel anything of this, it doesn't matter. It's not about getting anywhere. It's not about, you know, getting anything. It's about yourself. Where are you at? Are you making a little bit progress in your own practice, in your own way? That is what matters to you. It's not about whether you actually attain any of these things or not. So this is just an idea. It's just a map, right? And please don't feel inadequate or whatever just because you don't get any of these things. That is not the right way of looking at this. It's more just about having something at the back of your mind. That is what this is all about. So that is the this wonderful, in my opinion, wonderful sutta about the process of meditation. So again, just keep that at the back of your mind as some kind of idea, and use it as an inspiration, not as something which you feel you should attain, anything like that, rather as an inspiration of the beautiful teachings of the Buddha, in particular in regard to meditation practice. So, okay. So I think that is probably enough on that particular sutta. I'm going on to move on to the next one. And this is going to be very brief. But the idea here is because virtue, because sila is so important on the Buddhist path, this next paragraph, it says a little bit about that sila. So, you know, what is that foundation that we're trying to get hold of? This is another one of my favorite quotes. So you heard me say this probably a million times before, but I still enjoy it every time I read this out. So please forgive me for for that. So this is from a sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya called the Bala Pandita Sutta, the Fools and the Wise. The mem is added there, not actually even in the Pali. So the Fools and the Wise. This is just a tiny extract from a very long sutta. Again, when a wise man is on his chair or on his bed or resting on the ground, then the good actions that he did in the past, his good bodily, verbal, and mental conduct, they cover him, they overspread him, they envelop him. Just as the shadow of a great mountain peak in the evening covers, overspreads, and envelops the earth, so too, when a wise man is on his chair or on his bed or resting on the ground, then the good actions that he did in the past, his good bodily, verbal, and mental conduct, they cover him, overspread him, and envelop him. Then the wise man thinks, I have not done what is bad or evil. I have not done what is cruel. I have not done what is wicked. I have done what is good. I have done what is wholesome. I have made myself a shelter from anguish, or from fear, if you like. In other words, from future consequences, right? When I pass away, I shall go to the destination of those who have done, not done what is bad or evil. Bad is probably better. Bad. For those who have done, etc., etc. Those who have done what is cruel. Those who have done what is wicked. But I shall go to the destination of those who have done what is good, what is wholesome, who have made themselves a shelter from fear. He does not sorrow, grieve, and lament. He does not weep, beating his breast and become distraught. This is the third kind of pleasure and joy that the wise man feels here and now. So, this is the idea, right? The idea is that if you really have created a virtuous character of yourself, if you have created a virtuous, a good, a wholesome personality, then this is what you can expect when you sit down, when you rest in the evening, right? When you finally have a chance, of course, in the daily hustle and bustle of daily life, very often this does not work because you're doing too many things, too much interaction, things that might upset you temporarily, just too much stress perhaps, and all these kind of things. So in daily life, it is not always there. But when you eventually come back, right, you come to Jhana Grove, or you come back home in the evening, especially when you come here perhaps, when you have the time to really settle down, then if you have lived in the right way, then this all tends to arise all by itself. This is the ideal, right? This is what we're trying to aim at. And you can see here, it's like this mountain, right? The mountain which creates a shadow over the ground. It envelops you, it overspreads you. In the same way, the good actions, they envelop you, they overspread you. You cannot avoid those good actions. It's not something that you have to do very much about. You don't have to force yourself to think about these things. It's like you can't escape them, right? You can't escape all the good things you have done. And if you can't escape it, it means that you can't escape the consequences, the joy and happiness and the good feeling that comes as a consequence. you can't get away from the happiness anymore. And that is a pretty good deal, isn't it? You can't get away from the happiness. So this is the idea. So when you come here, your job is hopefully all the things that you have done in daily life. And if you haven't done enough, that's okay, because you find out about that when you come here. So you go back more determined when you get back again, right? Continue doing things. But your job now is just to rest and then allow these things to come to the surface by themselves. If you have created the foundation, then these things will arise all by themselves. That is the idea with this kind of thing. Yeah. And if they don't, well, then you keep on encouraging them here on this retreat, and you get that extra feeling of, yeah, I've got to do this when I go back home later on. You understand how these things actually work. Yeah. So that is this beautiful simile of the mountain. And again, remember, you have to create that mountain, right? It's like you have to make a mountain for yourself, a mountain of good actions, a mountain of, you know, the way you act, the way you speak, and the way you think. And the bigger that mountain is, the more it overspreads you, the more it covers you, and the less chance there is of you being able to escape into a byway of, you know, of wrong thinking or whatever. You can't remember those things anymore. They're so long ago that you did those dodgy things, that now all you can remember is all the good stuff. And the mountain is so large that there is no escape anymore. And then, when that mountain is in place, then this whole sequence of non-regret and all these things really has a chance and an opportunity to arise. So that is the result of virtue. This is the result. This is what we're trying to get to. On this retreat, I will go into much more detail about how it actually comes into being, not just the results, but what we need to do to get there. It's quite useful to know that, because there are so many details and so many aspects to this idea that we call sila in Buddhism. And that is the introduction for you. The next thing after this, we're going to start looking at the Noble Eightfold Path. I will not do that now because I'm afraid of just adding too much information in one go, so I will probably stop in a couple of minutes. But from here on, we will start to look at what is the main topic for this retreat, the Noble Eightfold Path. Maybe I won't say anything more about that now, otherwise we're kind of starting on that topic. But I will start that this afternoon at 3 o'clock when I see you next time. So that is all for this morning, so I'll see you later on. Thank you. It's working.